very much, and thanks for the invitation. I'm going to talk about a theorem that is actually the content already of my paper in 2015. But it's an unfortunate paper because I wrote this quite a long paper, and I put everything what I ever thought about measurement problem, and I was naively of the opinion that once I write this, I will never come back to this. But here I am, and I rewrite a little bit of this stuff in a more transparent way in a shorter paper just recently, and then add also some reference to recent developments, for example, a theorem that is related to this one by Frauchinger and Renner. Okay, so that will be kind of, you will see a lot of observers in superpositions today, and I mean, at PI, that's one of the places, the PI is one of the places where people get frightened by that. So there are a lot of Gedanken experiments will be going around, and here is the outlook of the talk, if it works. Wait a minute. It worked a minute ago. Okay. So it has three parts. The first part is I just repeat the Wigner's-Friend thought experiment, and then I will give a version of it by David Deutsch, which will be a basis, finally, for a no-go theorem for observer-independent facts. And I will define what I mean with the facts. And then I would try to get a lesson from this no-go theorem and propose a way to go out as observer-dependent relative facts. And then I will have a few remarks on the Frauchinger-Renner paper, which is the part two. In particular, I will see how it relates to the previous theorem. And then the part three is not contained in the paper. And that's something which I'm preparing. And it's about, well, a friend being in a superposition and knowing that she or he is in the superposition and what kind of conclusion such an observer can draw from this situation. And then I will play around with some speculative things of a failure of the standard quantum formalism in these situations. Okay, so here's the typical experimental situation I would like to consider. It's, well, there is an observer in a laboratory and has devices around it. And usually all the information that is necessary to make prediction in a quantum experiment is in the laboratory. Maybe this is a well-controlled preparation device, or maybe this is an outcome of the previous measurement. But we believe that if we can distinguish between an important and unimportant information laboratory, that we can then assign a definite quantum state to the system. For example, we are not interested if it rains or it doesn't rain. But we are interested in a specific switch position of a polarizer, maybe. And this allows us to assign a quantum state and finally to make, through the trace rule, probabilistic statements about clicks. And these clicks are really immediate experiences that an observer has in a laboratory. Well, and then I would like to remind you on a Bell's theorem, which implies and non-existence of predefined local values for complementary measurements. We can have a different version of division, what it really implies. I will take this one further on, and it will imply that I cannot have a joint probabilities for possible measurements or for complementary measurements that fix the local values. Here, for example, for the spin along x and z direction. Nonetheless, although we cannot have the joint probabilities for non-commuting observables, we do think that measurement results always lead to something which is real in a sense, because these are immediate experiences like a click in the detector or a specific position of a pointer. And so on. I will call these immediate experiences of an observer facts. Whereas these things are usually kind of a notion of the hidden values, which we can only measure at the time, only one of them. Okay, so I will use some kind of interpretation, of course, of the state, but it will be a really minimal one on which I guess everybody can agree. And this is this minimal operational way of interpretation, the state vector. And I quote here Wigner stating that the state vector is only a shorthand expression of that part of our information concerning the past of the system, which is relevant for predicting, as far as possible, the future behavior thereof. So even if you have a more realistic kind of attitude towards the wave function of the state, I guess you will agree with that part of minimal interpretation. And also, whenever I write down a state, I will have a requirement, namely, this will be a state for somebody. It means that this can be verified by this state assignment by performing a suitable measurement on the system. So I'll not write just a state of the universe. I will have a more careful approach in a sense that when I write the state, there will always be a measurement that can confirm the state. Doesn't need to be an observer in front of this, but there will be some device that can actually confirm the state assignments. This is just to be on the safe side for this no-go theorem. And finally, I will also take quantum mechanics to be universal in a following sense, that of course there will be the cut, the cut between object observation and what is beyond the cut, like observer or device. But this cut will be possible to shift, just like Heisenberg suggests, that can be shifted arbitrarily fine the direction of the observer. Which he wrote actually in a very interesting response that has never been published, a response to the EPR paper in 35. And now I will also like to address that this cut is not to understand as a physical cut, which is sometimes a really crude simplification of the idea of I think, well, a Copenhagen school. There is not a physical cut in a sense that they are just macroscopic world governed by the classical laws and microscopic governed by the quantum, but just as a functional distinction between object and subject, not a physical one, and this will remain also in this no-go theorem. However, it will be a movable cut. So in a sense that if I have a situation, a friend in front of the system and his measurement device, then of course the object observation, the system, but the cut is then between the system and the device and the friend, for the friend. But then if the whole composite system of the system and friend and device and maybe the entire laboratory could be the system of another level of description, which is the level description by Wigner, who can, again, as I said, confirm or test or verify this state assignment with appropriate measurement device. So in a sense, in moving the cut, the friend's measurement instrument loses its function and becomes itself a quantum system for Wigner, an object that can be observed by further set of Wigner's measurement instruments. And again, we can play this game in kind of infinite regression, if you want. So now we have we set the stage, and then I can define what I can remind you on the Wigner's friend experiment, in which we exactly have this situation where the friend performed a measurement on a system, and this is everything closed in a sealed laboratory, isolated. And I assume that Wigner knows all details of the experiment. He knows the initial state. He knows the interaction that leads to the measurement for the friend and can describe everything unitarily. So we have a Wigner's description, which is a superscript here, a Wigner's description of the system, which I define as S and F. So let's say that the system is a spin 1/2 system and that I have preparation along the x direction, and then I have a friend also described in a state zero, which doesn't need to be really identified or special characterized in great detail, but that just describes an observer ready to observe, so to say. And then, after interaction, or after measurement for the friend and the interaction for Wigner, we describe these situations in an entangled state between the system and observer seeing up, or the system being down and observer seeing down. Now, this, as I said, is not an... when I write this state, what I mean with this is that Wigner has a mean to verify his status assignment, for example, by performing a measurement that will just test whether this state is in this or in orthogonal complement of this state. Okay, so this should be contrasted with the description of a friend. Okay, we can think that a friend is, by performing the measurement, then, so to say, in one of two definite states. There could be something problematic here because I have a friend which assigned a state to himself. I will return back to this question later on, but for a while it's actually not important, and for the no-go theorem this will not be important because I will use all the time only Wigner's description. All what is important that the friend has an experience of a definite outcome. In no step of the proof it will be needed to know what the state he is in from his perspective. So this is just to show that that could be a possible description of a friend, but it's not necessary for the proof. Now, what is important is that we have a different account what has happened during the measurement, that's for sure. If friend has an experience of a definite outcome and the Wigner has no experience of outcome as friend. So there is these different accounts of these situations, and maybe we might think that this is, at the end, not so relevant, because as long as they do not communicate their results, for example, as long as friend does not communicate his result to Wigner, more precisely, they will remain separated, and they can have statements about their respective measurements, a measurement of the spin for friend or the measurement of this type for Wigner, and therefore we cannot build up any tension between these two descriptions, because at no step they will ever meet to compare their results. And when they meet to compare their results, for example, when friend really informs Wigner about his measurement result, then the state will collapse and they will agree upon their predictions. Now, that's exactly the moment where Deutsch came up with his idea, which I find it very cute. And he proposes actually a certain kind of communication between the friend and Wigner, but the communication then actually does not reveal which outcome friend has observed. And this could be, in a sense, a message, a piece of paper, or of course a quantum system in which this message can be encoded, of the type like, I see a definite outcome, or for example, I see no definite outcome. I'm not sure what the second one would mean, but in any case, this information is the same for both possible direct experiments of friend, for both possible outcomes, and therefore it factorizes out of the description of friend, of the Wigner, and can be really leaked out without any leaking information about which outcome has been observed. Of course, this is a Gedanken experiment, and what it means really opening laboratory, not allowing the information about outcome to leak and so on. These are all, in my opinion, technical questions and not of principle nature. Now, as I said, I don't know even what it will mean, and this is this option of seeing no definite outcome is not something which we experience in laboratory, and we don't think that friend's experience is any way different than the experience of us when we enter the laboratory, so I really don't know what it means. And even you can show that this option can break some quantum information bounds on state distinguishing states, and I will not follow this option. So I really keep only the option I see a definite outcome, and that will be the state then where this message is factorized out. Okay, given that this is now the description of Wigner, from the Wigner point of view, we might still ask ourselves what will be in nature if we would be able to perform such an experiment. What would be the outcome of Wigner's measurement, verifying the state assignment? And of course, one possibility is that the state just collapses due to a breakdown of the quantum mechanical laws. Because of the collapse models. And in that case, Friend will observe a definite outcome, but after a while, Wigner, by repeating experiment, can actually confirm that his state assignment was not good. And the second option, and that's the option that I would like to follow, is that Wigner confirms the state assignment and yet Friend observes a definite outcome. Of course, this is a very interesting option. I'm just leaving this as an open possibility because it suggests a new physics, but a more conservative, I would say, option would be actually the option two. So we have such a situation that, well, Wigner has some evidences that a Friend has observed a definite outcome. This is through this message. And then he can ask himself, okay, this is on one hand, I have some evidence that Friend has observed a definite outcome. And in addition, I can perform my measurement to confirm the state assignment. And from there, I receive a direct experience of a definite outcome. And now I can start to think, okay, well, it's very natural then to assume that both facts, Wigner facts, Friend's facts, and my facts coexist. And I can ask myself, well, how can I formalize this? And I would like to identify this formalization with assigning a truth value to observational statements, both to Friend and to Wigner. And I assume that they do build up a Boolean algebra. Okay, so it's a very strong assumption, but at the end of the day, it's just assumption, okay, I see a definite outcome. I can assign, of course, the truth value to my observational statement. And I also know that Friend has observed a definite outcome. So why not assign a definite outcome, one of the other, to him as well? And then to think about that these two observational statements can coexist in a sense that I can assign truth value to both observational statements. And it's a strong requirement because I require these truth values to then reveal the observed outcomes independently of whether the Wigner will measure his observable, or maybe he can ask Friend about his observed. So this is the Boolean algebra structure that I assume, and I also assume that there is some probabilistic measure that I can assigned to this Boolean algebra. After all, I will have some probabilities both for Wigner and the Friend's statements. Now, when you think about that, you will see that actually this requirement is a requirement of a hidden variable model, and that's what I want to actually convince you by building out now the no-go theorem. So the no-go theorem is based on several assumptions. The first one is universal validity of quantum theory. And in a very specific way, what I mean with this is that quantum predictions hold even if the measured system is large enough to contain itself and an experimenter. Of course, there is a lower level of experimenter. This is a Friend is meant here. Of course, the Wigner could be outside of the cut. Then the second one is something which I will call observer-independent facts. And this is that one can jointly assign truth values to the statements about observed outcomes of different observers. Or they build a single Boolean algebra. I can combine this, and I can think about AND or and negation of these statements. Then we have a usual locality assumption that the choice of measurement setting of one observer does not alter the measurement outcome of the other observer. And finally, the freedom of choice, that the choices of measurements are statistically independent of the rest of the experiment. So basically, these are common assumptions in Bell inequality tests, and we add something which, well, sometimes it's called realism, but in a specific setting here, and the universal validity of theory. Okay, so that's the assumptions, and now we have this Bell test for... Yes?
Question about your assumptions. Do you consider these to be the same assumptions that would go into deriving Bell's no-go theorem, or do you see them as distinct
okay.
in an important way?
Okay, there are, of course, possibilities to, I would say, replace 2, 3, and sometimes 2, 3, and 4 through local causality assumption of Bell. Okay, so but the fact is that I wanted to make a statement that really I would like to learn something about coexistence of these observational statements. I don't want now to go into the Bell theorem assumptions and what it implies, but the local causality itself allow you to derive these joint probabilities. And I wanted to separate this, but because I didn't want to scramble this locality with this notion of observing the fact together or to join this to make at the end the statements about really existence of these observation statements. At the end, I think I can come up with a more economic way of having less number of assumptions and taking local causality. And then I will go back into this violation of local causality and what it means and a regular discussion in the Bell's theorem, which I wanted to somehow avoid. Maybe I ask here too much. It's not necessary to ask that much if you think that local causality is a nice compound assumption. Yes?
In this case, Wigner and friend are talking to each other, right? Like the friend is telling Wigner that.
I will explain now the experiment. Okay. So these are just assumptions. Was there any question?
Oh, wait.
You will wait, okay. So that's the Bell test for Wigners and friends. So what I assume here that I have two Wigners and two friends, A and B. And I assume that friends share some entangled state. This entangled state will be of this form. So what I have here is a singlet between two systems, the spin systems. And then I have at the beginning observers in some standby state, expecting to observe, so to say. And then I have a this is the usual thing that you will assume, for example, in a Bell test. I slightly change this with some local operation only on the Bob system. This is the reason for that, is that at the end I want Wigners to choose between two settings, and it will be apparent later on. One, which will be the Wigner measurement, as we defined it before, like a large superposition. And the other observable will be the friend's measurement. So Wigner will be able to, that's the answer to your question, to choose between ask the friend, what have you observed? That would be one observable. And the other would be the regular Wigner observable, which would be the superposition basis. If I would not have this, that maybe the conclusions will be not so nice and apparent, because you know that in Bell's theorem, you have this like usual settings are such that all four kind of settings are different. And I also only want to talk about Wigner and friends observable. And therefore, I make this local transformation. Okay, at the end, if you make this, it's still a maximal entangled state, so this variation is not so important. When I rewrite in a nice way through this maximal entangled state using a shorthand for the phi plus and psi minus, you can write down this state in that way. Now, what we assume is that friends always perform measurements of the spins along z direction. Okay, so this will be fixed. And after they perform the measurement along z direction, this state will have the same form, except that now you will have here state of correlations between spins and what they have observed. So you again have these two states, which are maximal entangled state. And they are built up of some states that I call A up and B up, or A down and B down. And these A up or A down are actually a composite state of a composite system where the spin is up and then the friend that looks at this spin sees the spin up. And similarly for A down and B up and B down. So at the end of the day, they have this huge entangled state in the hands of Wigner with the code as I described. So this is the state. These can be written down in A up and B up, and A up and B up are given in that way. Okay, now we have the state that is shared by the Wigner and A and Wigner B after friends have performed measurements along Z direction. And now they define the observables. And one of the observable will be the observable that actually corresponds to facts of the friend. This is the observable in which Wigner, for example, could ask the friend, what was your result? So that's one way to measure this. Because as I remember that this V happened was exactly the basis in which the friend sees up and down. Okay, that's one of the observables, and that will be one A1 or one of the possible two observables in the Bell test. The other one is corresponds to the observation of the X spin, if you want, and corresponds to the Wigner's facts, if you think about the Wigner's verifying measurement, because it combines superposition of, you see that these off-diagonal elements and combines the superposition of these macroscopic states of friend seeing spin up or friend seeing spin down. So the two observables on Ellie's side are that form, and also the two observables on Bob's side are of that form. And now I come back to this initial assumption that at the beginning I rotate friends B spin. The reason for this rotation was just that both Wigner A and Wigner B at the end chooses between these two possible observables. And now we apply the usual quantum mechanics. We, from the assumptions of the no-go theorem, we can derive the bound two, and finally we violate this bound. And now the question is, what are the consequences of this violation? Okay, so these are assumptions again, and now we can choose what we want, or at least one of these assumptions cannot hold. We can believe in a collapse models like GRW or Diocci-Penrose models. We can think about that locality assumption is violated, like in de Broglie-Bohmian mechanics. We can think about some superdeterministic theories, but maybe the most interesting part here is that we may abandon on observer-independent facts. And I think some relative state interpretation, a la Rovelli or cubism or even many worlds interpretation is still in agreement with observer-independent facts. Now, one can think that possible there are more way outs out of this situation, and one can maybe think that well,
did you say they were in agreement with
observer-independent? Are in agreement with abandoning the observer-independent facts. So, sorry if I said different. So they have no problems with that. Okay, so each of them have no problems or read possibilities with violating the corresponding assumption. Now, maybe one can think of, yes?
Just to come in on the a standard many worlds interpretation would say there are observer independent facts, there are just multiple observers.
I'm not sure. Because in each of the, so we can go back to this later on. I don't specify here really. I talk with several of supporters of the view, and then some of them will say, well, in each branching universe, I have a relative, actually, facts. And I think the requirement of the Boolean algebra is stronger than what many worlds allow.
This is probably a good thing to talk about in the discussion.
Yes. Okay, so maybe there is another way out, and maybe one can say, well, there are these two possible facts, but maybe what I only proved is that one of them I can abound, and Wigner, who is definitely of a higher power, has superb instruments. Maybe these are the most fundamental facts, and I'm fine with abundant Friend's facts. But of course, you can build up infinite regression, as I introduced this before, so you can think about the Wigner observing the second level Wigner observing the first level Wigner, and so on and so on. And obviously, wherever you stop, you can build a corresponding Bell inequality test that will involve a higher order observer to disprove this possibility that there is one Wigner for which I can find the facts, and these are the most objective ones. So there is this an indefinite regression of observers. So there are many, so there is a way out. One, I would say, the wave function of the universe. There is also the ones that I listed just after commenting on a possible postulates that can be violated. But I here single out only this one or another one, which would maybe imply that there are no facts of the world per se. And you can say about the facts of the world because there are joint facts both for Wigner and a Friend. So you can then call them not only joint facts, but the facts of the world. And this will be maybe common for these versions of interpretation, at least one version of Copenhagen cubism and relational interpretation, stating that they're only relative facts relative to observers. Okay, with this I would like to complete the first part and then comment, and I guess those people who have heard this before maybe have something new to hear about this part, and this is a part about remarks to Frauchengen-Renner paper from 2016. I think sometime in spring, this spring, they should upload the second version of the paper. And I don't know how many of you are actually familiar with this. I will not go through the whole derivation. I will just pick up what are the assumptions and the conclusions of this theorem, but this is enough for me to make a point. They have also kind of a no-go theorem. It's based on three assumptions. The one is about a quantum theory. So they will say that theory forbids all measurement results that are forbidden by standard quantum theory. And this condition holds even if the measured system is large enough to contain itself an experimenter. It's very much related and close to the formulation of what I call universality of quantum theory, but since they have a deterministic outcomes, they don't need to talk about probabilities, but just talk about events that should never happen according to the standard quantum formalism. Okay, the second is something which they call single world. Two rules out the occurrence of more than one single outcome if an experimental measures a system once. What they mean with this is really possibility of having many worlds, because I don't know what an experiment would mean if it would have more than single outcome. I never saw this, but I guess this has a meaning. Is a statement that there are many worlds. And then there is something which I actually want to address more, and this is a self-consistency, that these statements about measurement outcomes are logically consistent, even though if they are obtained by considering the perspective of different experimenters. And out of these three assumptions, they conclude, and that's the title of their work, that single world interpretations of quantum theory cannot be self-consistent. Now, my point here is that the theorem holds, of course, but you can now ask for justification of any of these two assumptions. But what I would like to argue that this self-consistency assumptions is somehow too strong, and in a view of the no-go theorem, does not need to hold in quantum theory, and actually doesn't need to hold in more general theories. I'll try to argue this. In order to argue, I will have to present the sketch of the proof. of Frauchinger and Renner, the argument combines a set of statements. There are four statements, S1 to S4, that involve different observers. There are four observers, F1, F2, A, and W. And then there are statements that can be drawn on the basis of a theory, and these are these four statements. It really doesn't matter what the measurements look like and how they come up with these statements, but at the end of the proof, you have these four statements. I will like to read them from backwards, from the fourth to the first. So the fourth is something which Wigner, directly observes. It says V sees V is okay, and it's told by A that X is okay, okay? And then the next statement always starts as a condition with a part of the statement of the previous one. So it says, if A sees X, okay, then F2 sees Z is plus. Again, this is part of the condition for the next. If F2 sees Z, then F1 sees R equal to T. And then the last, if F1 sees R is equal to T, then V sees V is not okay, which is in contradiction with the first statement or a part of the first statement. Now, I would like first that you realize that there are actually two types of statements here. Okay? The last statement is something which Wigner observes directly. Wigner sees, it's a direct experience, that V is okay, and is also a direct experience. He is told by an observer that X is okay. Whereas the first three statements are not statements about direct observed experiences. It's not observed by W. It's just if he put himself in the role of any of these observers, he can conclude by using this theory what these observers would see. But he is not in this situation. So it's, I think, a very important difference. And the self-consistency actually condition helps them somehow to combine these four statements in a unique logical framework. So what self-consistency enables is some kind of a collapse others' knowledge into one's own knowledge. So this is a type of the argument that they use. Namely, if you have a statement, V knows that A knows, that F2 knows, that F1 knows, that V is not okay, from that they conclude that V knows that V is not okay. But look, this is as I said, this combines all these statements. They have a very different nature. And knowing that somebody else knows something is in general not equivalent to as knowing yourself that something is something holds. So this collapse of others' knowledge into one owns or is not a trivial step. Okay, so what I want to argue is that at least in weak way that this self-consistency has actually the same predictive power as considering all observers to build a Boolean algebra. I'm not saying that they assume that they build a Boolean algebra, but by taking a non-trivial step of self-consistency, this allows them to argue as if all statements belong to a Boolean algebra. And this is very easy to see, because all these four statements have a following symbolic character. So these are kind of implications, and there is this combination of and. V sees okay, and is told by A that X is okay. So they have this this form, and then we can easily prove the following, that if this second statement is true, and I treat them like in a Boolean algebra, that I can assign truth values to all these statements, and then I can close this Boolean algebra by taking and logical and operation, that's actually enough. Then I can have this chain of arguments P and Q implies R and A implies S, to conclude that S is true, which is of course in contradiction with the first part of the statement, which is directly observed. So that's how they conclude with the contradiction. But it's very important, they are completely different nature of these statements. The last one is something which is directly observable, and everything else is extending your knowledge to the knowledge of the other observers. So in that sense, I would say that the statements that single world interpretation is the only possible one is based on a very restrictive assumption, which doesn't need to hold, and it does not hold, in my view, in quantum theory, as the no-go theorem shows. But it's not only a specific feature of the quantum theory, and if you think this assumption is also not satisfied in the theory of relativity. This was mentioned several times during the talks of presentation of this work, but I repeat this, that you have this situation that every inertial observer claims that her or his clock ticks slower than that of a moving partner. Of course, it's taking together all these statements jointly in one logical framework, or if you want, in one Boolean algebra, leads to contradiction. But of course, the contradiction is removed as soon as you realize that the statements have only meaning with respect to the specific observer-dependent measurement procedure defining simultaneity. Therefore, there is no a priori contradiction here. And I think that a similar lesson is to learn here, that when we assign the quantum states, they refer to outcomes of different observers, and in particular, you know, Wigner-Friend type of experiments. But these different outcomes have only meaning with respect to observer specific experimental arrangements. And this is very similar to actually original Bohr's idea of contextuality. And there is no way and meaning in combining them because they are defined through different experimental arrangements. But I wanted to end with a remark, and a positive one, and about the conceptual value of this paper, in my view, that the result points to the necessity to differentiate between one's knowledge about direct observation and one's knowledge about others' knowledge that is compatible with physical theories. And the theorem teaches us that we need to make a distinction between them, which might be very important in development of Bayesian inference in the situations as in a Wigner-Friend experiment. And I think there is something positively to learn about that and to extend. Okay, and I would like now to conclude with the last part, which is part three, and it's not contained in a paper. And it's more, it's even more speculative than the previous Gedanken experiments, in a sense. And that's the idea that there is, first to realize that there is a way for Wigner to realize that he or she is in a superposition. And what kind of conclusion such an observer can draw. Now, what I want to create is a situation where the friend is not told by somebody that she is in a superposition, but can convince herself through direct observations that she is in such a situation. Okay, and so here is an idea. I do have here a Wigner, but at the end of the day, it could be an automaton or whatever that performs a certain set of measurements. And all what I really required that friend convince herself at the end that she was in a superposition. And I want also then to argue that these are the situations in which apparently application of the standard quantum formalism fails, and I will try to explain in which sense. Okay, so the situation is slightly different, just to make it more dramatic in a sense, and I assume that there is a device that measures many outcomes, possible outcomes, and that from the Wigner perspective or from outside perspective, the state is highly entangled, but there is a lot of possible outcomes and a lot of possible states of the friend's memory corresponding to immediate experience of the outcome. And I will assume that this dimensionless system is very, very, very large. Okay, and then I will also assume that friend, who is inside in the laboratory, knows that Wigner or some machine will perform the measurement to test the state assignment. So test whether this is the state or the complement of this. Okay, now if so, then friend is also required to send out her prediction about this measurement. Okay? And now in this situation, this prediction will be whether you're in that state or in a complement, Friend's prediction will be approximately, as D increases, this approximation will be better and better, saying that, well, I'm not in this state, but I'm in the complement, because the friend will be actually and having experienced only one of these D possible outcomes. And therefore, the overlap with the psi is very low as we increase D. Okay, so this is the required to send out her prediction. This prediction will stay outside. Okay? And now, the Wigner will perform the measurement, will confirm the state assignment. And then, of course, then he will, whenever he gets the state assignment as predicted by Wigner, who controls the hole, he will here make a mark. And then he can also measure the friend once more in order to ask you, what have you seen, for example? This result is not, this measurement is actually not important. It just allows you, friend and Wigner, again, to share the same environment and to be able to communicate. But it also allowed friend to look what is the mark of the measurement result that has been performed before, the measurement of the verifying the whether the system or friend and the system were in psi or not. And now they can perform again the same procedure, and once more they will convince themselves that the first outcome has happened and the first outcome has happened and so on. And at the end of the day, the friend can compare what was her prediction before with the prediction of the actual realized results of the measurement and see that this discrepancy is as large as it can be. Okay, now why there is a discrepancy? Well, because Friend applies a textbook quantum theory, I would say, with the projection postulate, but is likely to eventually update her state assignment departing from the practice of this textbook quantum theory. Of course, it could happen that it's highly unlikely, and this just happened that, but after a while, I guess, a rational agent will update her state assignment. Now, how should we understand this result? There are different possible ways. In many worlds, I think the answer is very simple, like, friend did not know the full state. Okay, so it's obviously that he makes kind of wrong prediction because he doesn't know the full state. Also in cubism, I think one can say, well, the state is a degree of belief, so it's fine that the observer updates this. I think that in both cases, there is what I will call an element of dissatisfaction as regarding to how an observer should practice quantum theory, because the situation here is really different than what we experience in everyday life. We also apply, we look around in a laboratory, we extract the most relevant information to make predictions, and we believe that we can do it in correct way and that we do it sufficiently good. Here we are faced with the same situation. We might have even some measurement before that will indicate what is the preparation of the state, but we will, with this information, fail to make correct predictions as regarding to the Wigner's experiment. So there is nothing in the local environment, if you want, that can tell you whether you do have a full information that is required to make a prediction about the final experiment or not. And this I see as a problem, because there is nothing in the theory which tells you a priori when you should be fine with the textbook quantum theory and when not, although these answers are reasonable answers. Finally, there is also the last possibility to say that, well, the textbook quantum theory is not suitable for making predictions about measurements involving one's own memory. Okay, and this somehow also is supported this view by trying to avoid self-reference problems that we heard also in the last talk. However, even here, I think it's a more subtle issue. And this is because there are predictions that you can make about your own memory that are in agreement with the textbook quantum theory and where there are no problems, in my view. And these are the usual situations that we face in the laboratory when we talk, well, we have prepared Z plus, or we have seen the Z plus in the previous measurement as an outcome, and then we predict what is the probability to see X minus. We never use actually statements about this observer's memory and states of the memory. We make statements about the systems, but there is no problem in order to replace all statements about systems with statements about, well, experiences of an observer, and we will make it predictions correctly in agreement with the Born's rule. The problem, so these are the situations in which we can, if you allow, to assign some states of memory of observers that are related to the macroscopic experiences. Now, the problems actually arise if the predictions are made in a basis that the Schrödinger cat states, that involve the Schrödinger cat states, like the one that Wigner can make. And these are the predictions that we cannot then make correctly because we don't know basically the phase in between these two states. So this suggests to me that maybe the problem is not self-reference, but rather is the problem about the states of the observer's memory. And if I may be more speculative, that basically the textbook's quantum theory is not designed, or this is not a part of the theory, the states of the observer in the Schrödinger cat states. Of course, they could be a part of the theory if you have a Wigner who again can confirm this state assignment by observing maybe some measurement outcomes in which his state of the memory will be still be this classical light, if you want, coherent state. Okay, and with this I would like to conclude. So there are three parts. The first one was kind of a no-go theorem. I tried to argue that it's impossible to jointly respect universal validity of quantum theory, the observer-independent facts, locality, and the freedom of choice assumption. Then I have a remark on the self-consistency of Rauching and Reder paper, and I try to argue that it might be too restrictive requirement on a physical theory. And finally, I argue about the, well, capability of the standard textbook quantum theory to actually describe all possible conceivable measurements. And I would like to draw your attention to the paper by Veronica and Stefan. Sorry for wrong spelling, I see right now, where they actually propose to extend the projection postulate such that it includes correct description from the point of view of Wigner. So it's an extension of the projection postulate that works also in all situations of ordinary situations to the projection postulates, but also include the possibility of going into the Wigner-friend scenarios. And with this, I would like to conclude. Thank you very much.
Very interesting. About this last part, about, you know, drawing up people's memories and things like that. So this experiment that Wigner does on his friend, you know, we can always just write down this projection thing and say this is a possible quantum experiment. But it's also one that we think in practice we wouldn't be able to do because, like, so, you know, suppose the friend, you know, wants to check her memory and writes down an answer, and that is outside that lab, then you can have decoherence. You know, if a figure can't bring that lab notebook into his experiment, you have decoherence in the rectum, I think. So in order to do the experiment, we have to basically erase anything that counts as a record of the outcome of the experiment.
Yeah.
But I think a case can be made is we're also erasing her memory. And think of it this way. Suppose she starts out in a I saw plus state.
And Wigner says, you know, and Wigner and she agree that that's her state. Right? So you imagine a situation, some kind of situation in which...
Why Wigner would agree? Because he doesn't see the Z plus. He sees something like that.
Let's say... Is there ever a situation where Wigner assigns to her a... So he asks her, right? So imagine Wigner asks her,
mm-hmm.
and gets the answer isop plus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Wigner and the friend are both assigning the isop plus state.
Mm-hmm.
Are we cool with that?
Yeah, but then you break the whole thing, because then the Wigner will not have assigned only this state.
Yeah, right, exactly. So he's not assigning that, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I want to make is an argument that this measurement that he does is a memory erasing, erases her memory.
Okay, so one version. Okay.
Hear the argument before you respond to it, okay?
Okay, yeah.
So suppose we, Wigner asks her what she saw, and she says, I saw plus.
Mm-hmm.
So he's assigning C plus. He can still do that measurement, superposition or not.
Mm-hmm.
And with probability, with a certain probability, he'll get the yes, she's in the superposition
yes.
answer. Right?
Yes.
Right. Now he can ask her again what she saw and get a result. Right?
Yes.
And nothing in quantum theory, and nothing in quantum theory requires those two answers to be the same. In fact, there's a certain probability that they won't be.
Yeah.
So that meant to be an argument that whatever he does when he does this experiment, it's erasing her memory of what she saw before he did it.
In fact, I was thinking that he does erase memory,
right,
but
yeah.
And even that is not a problem, because
okay.
she makes a prediction. She doesn't need to know the result
right.
at the end. She will see what was the final result and see what she was predicting before that, compares that and see there is a discrepancy. But now I even think that he does not erase her memory. And actually, the whole measurement can be done very simple, but it's a less operational, and that's why I didn't present this in this way. It could be done like that all the time a friend is closed. Okay, and then Wigner has prepared this state
right.
and performs confirmation. That's fine. Nothing will change on this state. The state remains the same. So nothing will change in friend's situation. Now, knowing this state, he can even copy the information, what the state is after performing a measurement, to another system and can send this system to friend. In many words, we will say it sends back to each branch of the many words. The friend will know what she sees this and will know this result and can again compare her prediction. And then she makes always this prediction and keep getting the result that actually P1 is 1. And it's closed all the time. So it's really I now describe. And you see that there is no erasure of her memory. Nothing changes because this measurement doesn't disturb the situation of the friend. I didn't like this because then she relies on this message getting from Wigner, and I wanted her to see with her eyes the results of the measurement. Detector, but I guess it's the same at the end.
Let me actually ask a question. So, as soon as you set up the experiment like that, and I like this a lot, now, we take for granted here, it's one of the assumptions that there are two different state assignments that are kind of valid at the same time. One is to say, what's in state psi? Then you say also have a point of view of a friend who says like who sees some I tensor CI.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have that, you might say, well, given that, I might as well take for granted that also the measurement has different descriptions. So for Wigner, it looks as if he performed this projective measurement. But the measurement is just some box or apparatus.
Yeah.
It's not that the apparatus comes with a description on it, labeled what it actually does. So then for friend, maybe just friend will have a different description of that device. Let's say for objective measurement, it's something that throws away the state and re-prepares psi, for example. Then you would probably not have any contradiction.
Yes. We keep thinking about that. It's a great idea to symmetrize the whole thing. Symmetrize the whole thing and find out exactly. We failed so far.
It seems you have to do it because thermodynamically for a friend, a bit is erased in the process somehow. And this has to go somewhere. So then it must go somewhere from friend's view. And so maybe there's an argument to be made that you need different descriptions to be consistent in that sense.
What do you think that, I mean, this, what, how, I mean, maybe it's simply that he really doesn't have the full information. That could be another possibility. He's just the friend, because he doesn't know the phase of all these things. So that he lacks the information.
Yeah.
I think this will also be compatible.
Maybe go too much into detail so we can discuss it.
But I think I like this, approach, and we tried actually to symmetrize this. This is something that will, I think, be more, it will be nicer explanation of the whole thing.
More questions?
This is going to be vague because I can't bring the details to mind immediately, but David Deutsch came up with an experimental test, what he calls an experimental test for many worlds, that is, as far as I can recall, an artificial intelligence essentially finding out that it was in a superposition. Is there a connection with...
I don't know exactly this, but he, in his paper, he argues that this test that I presented at the beginning is a test against the Copenhagen and in favor of many worlds. I don't think this is such a test, or it's just for very restricting or one part or one particular school of Copenhagen, because he thinks that in Copenhagen, you will have to collapse this. And I don't think that it's necessary to assume this is a part of the Copenhagen interpretation. As long as you have the cut, but the cut is movable, I would still call this Copenhagen interpretation. It's not that because it is a large system and now it has to collapse. It's a beautiful Gedanken experiment, but I think he drew a conclusion, unjustified conclusion with respect to proof over many worlds.
I have a weird question. It's about the logic of these theorems. So you always go like, I have this assumption and this assumption and this assumption. This implies something and I don't like what it implies or I don't agree or whatever. Therefore, some of the assumptions must not hold. Is there any way of taking an assumption or another assumption?
Uh-huh.
It's really hard, but I know probably.
Instead of and. Yeah.
Yeah, instead of an and, because then you would be able to distinguish which of the assumptions holds or doesn't hold. I think this would have amazing implications, right? Because you could have distinguished which of the assumptions doesn't hold. But maybe the question is absurd.
I don't know about that, but somehow some of these assumptions come again and again and again. Okay, and so one can say, oh, well, these are the ones that makes problem. But
maybe what might be easier is there can one negate some of these assumptions and then do the and of the negation, or that doesn't make any sense.
I don't know.
Or just
the end of whatever remains.
Yeah,
the end of a
subset must be interesting. Okay, maybe we can discuss it later.
Yeah, we can discuss it on the discussion session later. So let's stop here and thank Justin again.